It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Monday. Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we just thank you so much for being a part of today's presentation and enjoying another edition of Light the Tower. I am Jeff Howe. We're week two of two where we have lost our way. Craig is still on vacation, but he will be back in here 1 week from today. The Longhorns will be in the midst, in the throes of fall camp when Craig gets back. Reporting day is on Thursday. The first fall practice of the Steve Sarkisian era on the 40 acres is on Friday. And as of today, we are 33 days away from kickoff. What a time to be alive. I know the other member of our team here tried to get in some football today, but Mother Nature did not cooperate. So we'll get to that here in just a second. Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Standard fare on today's show. I'm flying solo. We've got a Longhorn notebook coming up at the bottom of the hour. Inconceivable at the end of hour number one. Another Longhorn notebook in hour number two. And today starts our Horn Top 20 Countdown, so we will hit that once in hour number one and again in hour number two at the bottom of both of those hours. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of when we're doing it, but at the end of the day, I think we're kind of doing our own thing. But Snoop and I will try to follow protocol as much as possible. Everybody knows how we do it. We'll keep the poot drops to a minimum and the toilet humor to a minimum, but we can't promise we will eliminate it altogether. Speaking of Snoop, let's go behind the glass and say good morning, a good start to your week, to our illustrious producer, the publisher, curator, otherwise Major Domo, of Flex ATX. At FLXATX on Instagram and Twitter, flexatx.com. He is Snoop Daniel. Snoop, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Shout out to all the listeners.
So I mentioned at the top that you tried to get in some football today. Props to and shout out and best of luck on seasons to those high schools attempting to start two-a-days today.
Well, I guess
it's not really two-a-days anymore. You're starting fall practice today. Those that did not go through spring training can start today. And I say attempting, Snoop, because you tried to go out to Hayes and Bowie this morning, and it wasn't so much the rain, but man, once that lightning starts and it keeps going, outdoor activities just ain't gonna happen. And it wasn't happening for Hayes or Bowie this morning.
All day yesterday I was like, oh, I gotta get up and be there at 6. And I swear, when my alarm went off at 5:05 this morning, you couldn't have explained to me with 1,000 words why I would have had my alarm set that early. I'm like, what? Why? I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to do camps. And then
what had happened was,
it was lightning the whole way there. I'm like, this don't look good. And I got there, and they're like, well, if we're going to do anything, it's going to be indoors. It's not going to be very much. So
you drove out to the thriving metropolis of Buda this morning?
35 minutes.
And then you went, did you actually make it to Bowie,
no,
or did Coach
no,
Abels call you?
No, that, not Elaine Foradori, who is the Bowie Football Booster Club president, who has a son, Grayson, who plays tight end quarterback, informed me that, Snoop, if you're going to come up here, just wait till later in the week, because lightning is kind of, made our... So, lightning, thank you.
So, coaches had to adjust all year last year to COVID, and now you're having to adjust on day one to the weather. So, Snoop, no Hayes, no Bowie today.
I plan on going to Crockett and LBJ this afternoon.
Nice. Okay, so we will have some high school football to talk about on the show tomorrow, since Snoop is out and about. Snoop, did Hayes get the mascot situation?
They did. They're now the Hawks officially.
So officially, as of this school year, they're the Hawks.
All their social media has been changed. They've had to. Okay. It's a lot of old mascot changing.
I got, because
a lot of work.
I'm just gonna get it out of the way now. Whenever we're talking to Hayes, I'm gonna say Rebels at some point. So yes. I'm just gonna get it out now. and say it now just so it's out there so I don't flub later and am kicking myself. So Hawks, I got to get my mind right for that. And nothing changing at Bowie with Coach Abels and company. They'll just keep rolling right along. And that's a team, Snoop, that's a Bowie team that you were high on last year as a team that, hey, you know, they're going to have some struggles this year, but you said, hey, 21 was going to be the year that Bowie was going
to
get back on
the track. The team that knocked Bowie out last year, which was Hayes, the Hawks, they went to the state 6A Division II Final Four. Mm-hmm. I think this year, I know it sounds crazy, but nobody would have predicted Hayes did what they did last year. And I think Bowie, you know, it's going to take some dice rolling the right way. But, of course, Lake Travis and Westlake, you put L's in a column, but I think 8-2 is possible.
So I know we'll talk more about these programs tomorrow, but Crockett and LBJ, Snoop, quick snapshot on both those. LBJ trying to
– LBJ is a super team.
Trying to rebound from that heartbreak they suffered last year in the state championship.
Against Lindale.
Or semifinal loss to Lindale, yeah.
I think they're better this year, even though they don't have Andrew McCutcheon, who went to Clemson.
You mean Latrell McCutcheon?
Latrell McCutcheon, who went to –
Oklahoma,
thank you. And Andrew Makuba, who went to Clemson.
Right.
Excuse me, thank you. And Crockett, you know, it's tough. It's tough sledding for any Austin ISD school that's lower than 6A. But Coach Derek Norton, second year head coach, he's excited, got the guys excited.
Right. So we'll have Snoop will be at Crockett and LBJ. That's his plan to get out there this afternoon. And depending on what goes down, who he's able to talk to, we might have some stuff tomorrow on the Crockett Cougars and the LBJ Jaguars tomorrow on the show. Just for so the community knows, Snoop, what you're doing, do you know anywhere else that you're for sure going to be throughout the week?
Oh, Manor.
I guess you'll have to go to Hayes and Bowie at some point.
Manor, Del Valle. A lot of the schools who weren't privy to have a spring camp.
Right. Yeah. If you did not do spring training today, you can start today.
Hendrickson.
Okay. So that's actually, I know Hendrickson usually doesn't do spring ball under Coach Killian. They haven't. They usually start early. So it's good to know a lot of high schools getting out and about and starting early. Let's talk about the Longhorns. I mentioned 33 days until kickoff, and we will, in a way, I mentioned Texas when we get to our Horn Top 20 coming up at the bottom of the hour, and we will have a Longhorn notebook also. But we won't focus too much on the realignment stuff. It is what it is at this point. Texas has, we mentioned this on Friday, and everybody knows by now, Texas has accepted the SEC's invitation. Now it's time for the lawyers to do their lawyering and all the legal stuff to play out in terms of when Texas and Oklahoma can make that jump. There is a committee hearing today, so we should have some information on that for you at Horns 24/7 coming up later today as that information starts to trickle out. But let's go ahead and start looking at what's going to happen to Texas on the field during the 2021 season, because that's where we are right now. Again, reporting day on Thursday, the first practice on Friday, and as of today, 33 days away from kickoff. And I just want to reference our insider at Horns 24/7. And one of the things to do, Snoop, is to start looking at, and one of the things we haven't really talked about, but now is as good a time as any to do it. And what about some of these position battles in camp? Always going to be competition. And I think especially in a year with a first-year head coach and a new group of coaches, and you're having to replace quite a few guys that went up to the National Football League. Like, hey, we know about quarterback, and we're going to talk plenty about that quarterback battle, not just this week, but really until and even after Steve Sarkisian makes his decision on who's going to start that first game on September 4th against Louisiana. Whether it's Casey Thompson or Hudson Card, there will be potential ramifications from wherever that decision goes. But as we start to look at some of the position battles in camp, Matt Butler and I, since Rod Babers is not here as of right now, Rod will be back later in the week, but Rod, congratulations to Rod and Melissa for their wedding over the weekend out in Lake Tahoe. I saw a couple pictures from Craig's Facebook page.
Me too.
Wedding. So, yeah, it looked like a really nice ceremony. So
they're a beautiful couple.
Shout out to Rodby and Melissa on their wedding, and we're looking forward to getting Rod back into the studio as we get closer to football season. Always great to chop it up with Rod B. So Matt Butler and I were flying solo on the Longhorn Blitz podcast this week, and one of the position group battles, Snoop, it's a position group we've talked about throughout the offseason, is that receiver group. And I mentioned our insider that was posted last Thursday at Horns 24/7, which you might have missed in all the realignment hubbub because that seemed to drive most of the traffic and most of the discussion. But in the Insider was a recap of summer workouts. Summer workouts are done. They wrapped up last Friday. Sark's giving the players some time off before they report on Thursday. And maybe the most prominent name continues to be freshman wide receiver Xavier Worthy. His name has come up all summer as a guy who appears to be a potential impact player from a speed and separation standpoint. According to a team source, quote, let's see it in pads, but he certainly grabbed his teammates' attention. And I've talked a lot about that receiver group. There's a lot of potential there, but it's not production, and a lot of it's unproven, and who's going to step up in that group. And I think it's worth mentioning, outside of Joshua Moore and Jordan Whittington, who Joshua Moore is a proven commodity. He was your leader in receptions last year. And I think at this point, Jordan Whittington's a proven commodity. Now, we haven't seen him do it for a sustained amount of time because of the injuries, but he got through spring ball healthy. And the fact that, you know, he's apparently no setbacks reported throughout the summer, looks like he's going to hit camp healthy. Those two guys I would put in the proven commodity category. But outside of that, man, I can't really put anybody else in this receiver group in the proven commodity group. And I know we've seen guys flash. We've seen Kelvonte Dixon flash. Saw his big touchdown catch in the bowl game. We've seen Marcus Washington flash a little bit. And everybody's favorite walk-on, Kai Money. Kai Money is still in the mix. So there's a group of probably about 4 to 6 guys that have and Xavier Worthy certainly in that group, Troy O'Meara in that group as well, Alvante Water, that have a legit chance to be contributors for this team. But whereas Tom Herman had a really, really deep receiver group, I keep this in mind, Matt Butler and I brought this up on the podcast, and I thank Matt for doing this. If you look at guys that had double-digit targets for Texas last year, Texas had 13 different guys with double-digit targets, and that's in a 10-game season. So that's really spreading the wealth around and trying to get a lot of guys involved. You go to Sark's offense at Alabama, there was only 8 guys that had double-digit targets last year, and a lot of those were gobbled up by 3 guys. Najee Harris, obviously Devontae Smith, the Heisman Trophy winner, and John Metchie. So, yes, the talent level Sark had to work with at Alabama is certainly different than what he's got at Texas. But between, like we talked about, not just with Bijan Robinson, but this Texas offense being built around the running back position, and again, knowing that Sark has experience, he's got a background working with personnel groups, a featured personnel group being a 20 or 21 personnel offense, that being 2 running backs and either 1 tight end with 21 personnel, no tight ends, that being 3 wide receivers with 2 running backs on the field. He's got experience running a 2-back offense with 2 tailbacks. He admitted he did it at Washington with Bishop Sankey and Chris Polk and continued to do it throughout his tenure at Washington. Didn't do it a whole lot at USC. His two seasons there, really one full season and an abbreviated season. Didn't really do it at SC. Didn't really need to do it at Alabama because you had a workhorse with Najee Harris and all that talent at wide receiver. And Sark really likes playing with tight ends, and I'll get the tight end component to this in a second. But knowing Sark's got experience running a 2-back offense with 2 tailbacks, and knowing that Texas has 2 proven commodities at tailback with Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson, and knowing that Keelan Robinson is going to be a really big part of this offense, as Sark's called him, the gadget play guy. The more good things I hear about Keelan Robinson, he's going to help alleviate that issue of losing Jake Smith to the transfer portal with him going to USC. So this offense being built around the running back position and the tight end group. And Sark, he talked about in the spring, he said the tight ends are really key to what they do. And you know, again, not to turn this into a bash Tom Herman segment, which I feel like most of our football segments turn into that way, and I apologize to the listening audience for that. But, you know, we never really saw the tight end position be what Tom Herman said it was going to be. Kind of that the tight end was going to bind. It was going to be the tie that bound that pro-style, those pro-style passing game concepts with the spread philosophy that Tom Herman used to come up with his pro-spread offense. We never really saw it like that. But just go back and watch some Alabama games last year. Like, Miller Forrestall, Jahlil Billingsley played more than you would think tight ends would be on the field, even at the same time, in some 12 personnel looks at Alabama. And Cade Brewer, Snoop, a guy that I know you've seen for a long time. Cade Brewer, is he the second coming of David Thomas? No, but if used properly, he's got a role within this offense. And I love the upside of Jared Wiley. And we haven't seen it from Braden Leibrock because of the injuries. But keep in mind, that guy was one of the top receiving tight ends in the country coming out of high school a couple of years ago out of the state of Arizona. And you're thrown to the fact, look, I know it was a limited sample size, but behind the scenes leading up to spring ball and throughout spring ball, heard nothing but really good things about Gunnar Helm and Juan Davis. And we saw both of those guys flash a little bit in the spring. And I don't know how much they factor into it, but we know Sark is going to use tight ends, whether it be one of them on the field at the same time, playing two of them together, and being able to have guys that are versatile enough to do some different things. So you talk about the need to get your running backs involved. We know Sark is going to work with the tight ends. Common sense tells you that doesn't leave a ton of snaps, at least a ton of snaps, to be divided equally between a lot of wide receivers. So that, when we talk about camp battles, that's one of those camp battles for me, is how many receivers are going to join Joshua Moore and Jordan Whittington in that group of guys that Steve Sarkisian and Andre Coleman really feel like they can trust and devote reps to? Because it's going to be different. Again, I just mentioned the target numbers. You could look at snap count numbers. Man, that wide receiver rotation for Steve Sarkisian, and again, it was at Alabama, and you did have a Heisman winner, and a guy in John Mechie who's predicted to do big things for Alabama this year as they make the shift with Bill O'Brien as their offensive coordinator. But that number of guys used in the rotation for Steve Sarkisian at Alabama, it was only like maybe six deep. It ain't going to be the eight or nine deep or the sheer volume of guys that Tom Herman had last year. And even then, you go start looking at, okay, who were those guys at Texas, those 13 guys that had double-digit targets last year? Okay, well, Brennan Eagles, we know, is no longer here. Tariq Black, we know, is no longer here. Jake Smith, we know, is no longer here. Brendan Schooler is now playing defense. Keontae Ingram was one of those guys. He's no longer here. So you're basically going to take those targets, and instead of spreading them out over a lot of guys, again, I think that wide receiver group, it's going to be maybe probably four or five, I think at the most six guys. So whatever three or four guys can join Jordan Whittington and Joshua Moore in that category of guys that Sark and Andre Coleman want to devote the most of their snaps and targets to, that's your group, that position group battle at wide receiver. I would say Troy O'Meary's got the inside track to be one of those guys. I would say Xavier Worthy, based on the fact that this staff actually recruited him, he's got the inside track to be one of those guys. And who else steps up? Is it a Marcus Washington that we've seen show some potential? Is it Kai Money? If Kai Money is in the receiver rotation, nobody can complain, because all things are equal at this point. Nobody can complain if Kai Money is in that group, because this is a brand new staff that doesn't have a lot of proven commodities at that position. If they decide Kai Money is one of those guys, oh well, so be it. Somebody should have stepped up and taken his job. Is it a guy like a Kelvonte Dixon, who again, we saw that big touchdown catch from in the bowl game? So a lot of stuff to be determined at that receiver group when we start talking about position battles. And that's going to be one of the themes of today's show, is looking around the various position groups on this roster and seeing where some of the best battles in camp going to be. I love talking about camp battles going into camp, and we haven't done a whole lot of it this offseason because we've been overwhelmed with a new coach and new coordinators and new schemes and Texas joining a new conference. So we've had a lot thrown at us, but now we really get to get down to the nitty-gritty in terms of camp, and I love it as Texas gets ready to report on Thursday and have the first practice of the Steve Sarkisian era on Friday. Take a break. We'll come back. We've got a Longhorn Notebook, but we've also, coming up in the next segment, got to get to this hour's edition of the Horn Top 20. We'll do all that and more. Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Inconceivable coming up at the top of the hour before we get out of here close out hour number one. Before we get to hour number two, we will have Inconceivable as we roll along on a Monday on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
The Sark era begins this September on the Horn.
I don't really have a feel.
Rolling along on a Monday, Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Also streaming right now on Twitch. If you want to go to hornfm.com and pull up the Twitch feed and watch us there. You can also do that on the Horn app and watch the Twitch feed. Now, we'll say watch at your own discretion because it's just, well, there's not a lot exciting with me on Twitch. I just sit here and I got up and got some water during the break and you know, I might be sitting here making some notes, but I don't know. Maybe the main attraction when this show is on Twitch is Snoop behind the glass. Because Snoop, I don't know what goes on in that producer's booth during the break. I just try to stay out of your way and out of your line of vision as much as possible because I know you got a lot of irons in the fire right now.
Now Twitch is popping again, though. 106 viewers. That's really good. I mean, normally we've been hovering around 60 or 70, so 106 is really good.
Nice, nice. So thanks to everybody listening on Twitch. We'll get to the Horn Top 20 coming up here in just a minute. Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Snoop, we got one texter wanting to know what that intro, the return cut was. What was the return cut?
Yes, it was a Cash Money Millionaires Project Chick.
Project Chick.
Give me a project chick. Give me a hood rat chick.
Yes. So. Yes. Throw that in your Google machine, your Apple Music, whatever you do. And Stoner with a worthwhile question. This is the kind of stuff we're here for. So are we going with Xavier or Xavier on Worthy's name pronunciation?
You better ask him.
Sark has gone with Xavier. So until I hear different, I'm going with Xavier.
I always get it wrong. If a kid, his name is spelled that way, I call him Xavier if his name's Xavier, and Xavier if his name, not on purpose, but I just guess wrong.
You know, Sam Ellinger and I had that conversation one time, and I've had this with other people.
His last name.
Because people do the Ellinger thing. And one time Sam was like, this was early on in Sam's career. He's like, whatever. I'm like, no, I'm like, it's your name. It should matter. How do you want it pronounced? I think that should matter. So kids out there, high school kids, if you're talking to reporters and you've got a name that's tough to pronounce, don't just say, eh, whatever. No, get it right. It's your name. It's your family name. Your parents gave you that name. So you should be proud of it and want people to pronounce it correctly. So, again, until Sark corrects me or corrects somebody else or maybe has to correct himself, I don't know, we're going to go with Xavier for Worthy's pronunciation. All right, Snoop. Let's go ahead and make it happen with the notebook right here.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Tours. Go to cptours.com.
There it is. Got to straighten out there. All right. We'll keep talking about camp battles. I mentioned the battle at wide receivers, really, to find out who's going to be in that group with Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington. Man, I guess since we didn't talk about it on the Blitz, and look, I haven't avoided talking about the quarterback battle at Texas because I don't want to or I don't find it interesting. I just don't think at the end of the day it's going to matter. And this is why I say that. I don't think it's going to matter because you're going to need both of these guys to get through a season. Like, you can think about the seasons where Texas, in some way, shape, or form, just think about it in recent history. For most of those seasons, they've needed two quarterbacks to get through it. Now, the lone exception, 2019 with Sam Ellinger, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think Sam started and played pretty much every significant snap of that season. But even last year, you needed two to get you through the season because you needed Casey Thompson to finish the bowl game. And said it before, I'll say it again, when Casey Thompson came into the bowl game, it's coming off the bench cold at halftime in a one-possession game. That game had not turned into a blowout yet. So I would consider that significant experience. Okay, so that's 2020, you needed it. 2019, you didn't need it. 2018, you needed, you were not even one complete series into the Baylor game in 18 when you needed Shane Buechele to come off the bench and relieve an injured Sam Ellinger. You also needed Shane Buechele to go finish that Iowa State game. So you needed it in 18. You also needed it in 17 when Buechele and Ellinger seemed to swap injuries and, you know, it was just kind of, hey, which one's healthy this week? All right, that's the guy you're going with. And by the end of the year, there was a competition again leading into the offseason going into 18. Won't talk about that. Go down that rabbit hole again. But you needed two to get through 17. So we're still at one season going back through 2017 where you did not need two quarterbacks. 2016, yes, Shane Buechele started every game. And yes, he didn't really need anybody to relieve him with the exception of that Kansas game, but the Texas staff tried to alleviate that with Deontay Foreman carrying it 51 times. Speaking of being 33 days away from kickoff, best 33s in school history. Deontay Foreman's definitely in that conversation. But in 2016, you also had the 18-wheeler package with Tyrone Swoops. So by scheme, you needed two quarterbacks to get you through the season. Okay, so you're still at one season. Go to 2015, you're back and forth between Tyrone Swoops and Jarrod Hurd, and we don't need to go down that ugly rabbit hole of that quarterback battle. It's nice that we're talking about quarterback battles in much different terms now than we were just about 5-6 years ago. Go to 2014, David Ash gets hurt in the opener. You need Tyrone Swoops to finish the year. 2013, David Ash starts the year, gets hurt. Case McCoy finishes the year. 2012, you had a couple of games where David Ash missed, or I think he missed, got injured in the TCU game, missed the K-State game, came back for the bowl game. You still needed Case McCoy to help you get through the year. 2011 started with Garrett Gilbert as your starter. Then you needed to go to, I think you went to Case McCoy first, then David Ash, then back to Case McCoy, then back to David Ash. But you needed more than one quarterback to get you through the year in 2011. And in 2010, Garrett Gilbert started the entire year and played every significant snap of that season. So since the start of the 2010 season, 11 seasons of Texas football, you needed multiple quarterbacks to get you through the year. There were only 2 years where you didn't need that. You didn't need multiple quarterbacks to get you through a season. So that's what I said. History tells you you're going to need both of these guys to get you through the season. So whichever one doesn't start, you just hope that they don't get their dobber down and decide to enter the transfer portal and start anew somewhere else. Because chances are, man, if you're the backup, especially with a first-year head coach in a new scheme, man, whether it's an injury or a performance issue or whatever, and chances are, if you're the backup quarterback, you're going to have your number called. No, maybe not. I think ideally what any Texas fan should want is you would want a quarterback battle to go like the 2006 quarterback battle went. And by the way, you still needed both quarterbacks to help you get through the year because you needed Jevon Steen to play most of that Kansas State game. But you just hope that, hey, in that case, it was Colt McCoy wins the job and goes on and wins more games as a starting quarterback than anybody in school history, sets an NCAA record for that that only lasted for a season until Kellen Moore broke it. But you get the point. Like, you hope that whoever wins this battle, you hope, the hope is that they just take it and run with it. But again, history tells you that's probably not the case. So I say all that to say this. We did hear about the quarterback battle in our insider piece on Horns 24/7, which was posted late last week. At quarterback, Casey Thompson, quote, has been the more comfortable leader, end quote, in player-run practices. A team source said Hudson Card has had, quote, a great summer throwing the ball, but so has Casey, the source says. The true test, as always, is when pads come on. So it doesn't seem like there's been a lot of separation for one guy or the other over the summer. And this thing has played out kind of like, I think, how most of us expected it to play out. I don't think anybody was expecting one of these guys to just grab the bull by the horns and run away with the job in the summer, giving all the newness around the program and the lack of starting experience both of these guys have. And again, I've said it before, I'll say it again, Steve Sarkisian is in a unique situation because he is the first head coach, the first first-year Texas coach, head coach in the post-Daryl Royal era to take the job where he has zero games of starting experience in his quarterback room. So really, you're starting from square one with the exception of those snaps Casey Thompson got in the Alamo Bowl. And it does help that Casey Thompson was on the travel squad and he's been here for a few years and he's been behind Sam Ehlinger and he's been able to watch and just kind of take things in and just at least develop the mental side of playing that position, which don't take that lightly. That's a really big part of what playing quarterback at this level is all about, is what goes on between the ears. So don't discount that. But again, it's a lot different than when you've prepared to be the starter. You know you're going to be the starter. That other opponent has game planned specifically for you all week. And now you've got to step on the field under the lights with 100,000 people around you. Hopefully, knock on wood, that's the case on September 4th. It's just, and you've got all 11 guys on defense trying to take your head off. It's a different game, even when you've been in the program as long as Casey Thompson has. So that should be the hope, that one of these guys grabs the bull by the horns. But I think this competition, it's going to continue to be a good competition. And we'll see. Whenever Sark makes that decision again, I think it's going to be close enough that whoever the backup is not going to be just completely out of an opportunity. So that's kind of where things stand at the end of summer workouts with the quarterback battle Casey Thompson, again, has been the more comfortable leader in the player run practices. Hudson Cards had a great summer throwing the ball. So was Casey Thompson. And basically it sounds like, hey, the padded practices are going to separate it, which I think that's where we all figured this thing was going to be headed at the end of the day. All right, that's going to do it for our Longhorn Notebook for this hour, but we got some other business to take care of.
When you put that uniform on, you better come to work.
It's the Horn Top 20, brought to you by Allstat Beer. No impurities, no regrets. Number 20, the Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns.
Speaking of September 4th at DKR, Louisiana checking in at number 20 in our top 20 countdown. Now, as we got to the bottom of this thing, there is group of five representation in this top 20, clearly. But we had to put one of those Fun Belt teams in. And really, it's not going to shock me, Snoop, if we look at the preseason AP poll. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see three Fun Belt teams in there. Because there's three teams that make a really good case to be a top 25 team. Obviously, Louisiana, who we've got in, Appalachian State, and Coastal Carolina. All three of those teams are really, really good football teams. But we went with Louisiana. Billy Napier's team, 10-1 last year. Remember, they went on the road to open the season as an 11-point underdog, as a double-digit underdog, and beat Iowa State 31-14. And if you go back, think back to that game, just that awkward, weird opening weekend where it's like, at best, half-full stadiums, and it's kind of weird to wrap your head around everything that was happening in a COVID season. But, man, Louisiana got the ball, it seemed, with like 6.5 minutes left and never gave it back and just pounded the rock down Iowa State's throat and won that game 31-14. Yes, they had some special teams touchdowns, but the way they closed that game, and at one point, based on kind of how he managed the clock when the Raging Cajuns had the ball, I love me some Matt Campbell, but it really felt like Matt Campbell was waving the white flag at one point. That was a resounding victory for Billy Napier's team, so they went on the road and beat Iowa State to open the year. They were in the top 25 most of the year. Their one loss was a 3-point loss to Coastal Carolina, and if you remember, those two teams were supposed to have a rematch in the Sun Belt Championship game, which was canceled due to COVID, so we didn't really get to see Coastal and Louisiana play again. They both went on to bowl games, and Louisiana went to the First Responders Bowl, played on the SMU campus, beat Jeff Traylor and UTSA to finish 10-1 on the season. 10 starters on offense back for Louisiana in 2021, 10 starters on defense back. They did lose Elijah Mitchell, their leading rusher, who had over 800 yards on the ground last season, but everybody else is back, including Levi Lewis, the quarterback. When you're only missing one starter, and I just named who it is, that's everybody at wide receiver, everybody on the offensive line is back. Just about every significant player, any player of note you had on defense last year is back for Louisiana. And there is some familiarity between Steve Sarkisian and Billy Napier. They were both together on the Alabama staff with Nick Saban in 2016. Billy Napier was a position coach. Sark was an analyst that season for Alabama before he went to the Falcons for 2 years and then came back to Alabama and then obviously to Texas now. But there's a healthy amount of respect Steve Sarkisian has for Billy Napier. And Billy Napier, if you look at his trajectory as a coach, Snoop, it's really interesting. You know, I remember a time where he was on Dabo Swinney's staff at Clemson. He was the offensive coordinator at Clemson before they hired Chad Morris. Billy Napier's time as Clemson's offensive coordinator. He was a longtime assistant at Clemson, 06 to 08. He was the tight ends coach and the recruiting coordinator. But two seasons, 2009 and 2010, he was the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Gets fired after the 10th season. Dabo Swinney hires Chad Morris, and that's when we see Clemson's offense take off. But he goes to Alabama. He's an analyst in 2011. He goes to Colorado State in 2012, which I believe Jim McElwain was still the head coach at Colorado State at the time. Then he goes back to Alabama from 13 to 16. He's the receivers coach. He spent 1 year at Arizona State and then takes the Louisiana job. He's 28-11 with the Raging Cajuns, 2-1 in bowl games. And, you know, he's done a heck of a job building this program. Obviously, they were co-champions of the Sun Belt last year. They got awarded the co-championship since the conference championship was not played. They've won the West Division, 18, 19, and 20 West Division champions of the Sun Belt. So they haven't gotten over that hump and won the Sun Belt championship game. Whoever they play again, whether it's App State or whether it's Coastal, you figure they're going to play a quality team. But I say all that to say this. You look at Billy Napier, his trajectory. He's gone down that road. He's worked under Dabo Swinney. He's worked under Nick Saban. He's only 42 years old. He's still a young guy, but he's got this program in a position where, depending on how their season plays out, we could look up at the end, regardless of what happens in that Texas game, we could look up at the end of the year and say, and a lot of that, I think, too, will have to do with Texas trajectory. We could look up and say, hey, Louisiana's got the best group of five team. Even with one loss, they've got the best group of five team in college football. And Billy Napier's got this program in a position where he had a chance to leave that place and take the Auburn job, and he didn't do it. He stuck around, and you know, talking to some people down there close to that program, they really feel like they are on a path to where they can be consistently year in and year out one of the better group of five teams in the country. Again, 10 starters on offense, 10 starters on defense, back for a team that went 10-1 last year. When you look at their schedule, I mean, outside of the Texas game, they can win every other game on their schedule. Their toughest game, October 12th, it's a Tuesday game against Appalachian State. That game is going to be in Lafayette. They will host App State. So this is a team, again, because of what they did last year and because of what they did to Iowa State and how they won the Iowa State game, they are not going to sneak up on anybody. And because of the respect and the relationship Steve Sarkisian has with Billy Napier, I guarantee you the message from the top down on the 40 acres is going to be, do not take this opponent lightly. This is a game Texas should win, but this isn't a game where you can just roll the ball out and get out of bed and show up and give it your best. You're going to have to sweat a little bit. You have to put in a little bit of work. But when we start talking about the Texas non-conference schedule with Louisiana and Arkansas, again, there's a reason I've been saying, if you come out of this non-conference schedule, those first two games, if you come out of it 2-0, that's going to be two wins you can really hang your hat on, hosting a good Louisiana team and going on the road to Fayetteville to play Arkansas. So number 20 in our Horn Top 20 countdown. We'll get a little bit more into the Raging Cajuns in the second hour, but number 20, the first team in our Horn Top 20 countdown, is the team that, well, if you can't be at DKR, or maybe you don't want to be at DKR on September 4th, you can hear that game here on the Horn. You can hear Louisiana's opener because it's Texas opener, September 4th, 3:30 kickoff here on the Horn. Snoop, you're planning on being at DKR for the opener, right?
Still no voice. Me and my homie Greg, I don't even know my friend's name anymore, Dave Fralick from Fox 7. We went to all the
and
home
Dave's
games.
Dave's a listener to this show.
He Snoop. Is. Dude, and they listen while they're in the Fox 7 studio, him and Zach Shields. While they have their downtime, they're rocking like the towers. So anyway, sorry, Dave. But yeah, I just hope it's not 100 degrees.
And you hope you're not sitting in the upper deck section where you get vertigo again?
I don't even think I ever told Dave.
Well, you said it on the air, and Dave listens to the show, He knows at this point.
Sometimes, yeah, I get a little nervous when I'm up there. It's only when I shoot the cannons.
Can we get you some Dramamine? I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe that'll help.
That might help. Because you know, Jeff, I'm a high-strung person. And
I've known that in the, you know, how long have we been working together, Snoop?
Over a year.
Over a year now? Yeah. I do know.
A year and, oh my God, like a year and 3 months.
Yeah, so, you know, those 14 months, or no, what year, that'd be 12 and 3, 15. I went to Florence High School. Math is not my strong suit. Those 15 months we've worked together, I have known you to be a little high-strung.
What?
So we'll get Snoop. We'll get
Why
Snoop.
Do people hate Kai Money?
Who's hating on Kai Money?
Just people in general. Is it because he's from Hawaii and he doesn't fit? He doesn't look like Tyreek Hill.
He's actually from South Padre.
Oh, is he? People be hating on him. He's getting the job done. Anyway.
What are you looking at? You looking at Twitter? You looking at Twitch chat?
Well, no, I just know in general people just make fun of
Kai
Money.
I didn't know something had popped up. No, I think it's because I think the Kai Money issue is, in effect, it was a Tom Herman issue, right? I just think they felt like, I think the perception is that Tom Herman, being a former Division III wide receiver, kind of saw some of himself in Kai Money. So they're like, ah, this is Herman throwing the guy at the bottom of the totem pole of bone. Guy works hard, sees himself in him, blah, blah, blah. So I think because there was so much dislike in this fan base for Tom Herman, I think Kai Money was guilty by proxy. I think so. I think that's part of the reason. And, right. And you know, again, part of that is maybe there were some rotational issues. Maybe some of those reps should have gone to some other guys. But you got into that stretch. And, again, I don't want to go down the Tom Herman rabbit hole, but you got into that stretch, like for the Texas Tech game, where Jordan Whittington was hurt and Jake Smith didn't make the trip. And maybe instead of going to some more two-back stuff or putting a different receiver on the field who just specifically was not an H receiver, you just gave Kai Money those reps. And I think people would have liked to have seen Tom Herman and that offensive staff be a little more imaginative with personnel rather than just plugging in the next guy at that position who just happened to be Kai Money. And it got to a point where, hey, in a tight game, you've got these scholarship guys. Do you really need a walk-on in there? But at this point, we're at the point now where if Kai Money is still in that receiver rotation, like I've said, you've got nobody to blame but the scholarship guys that are there because they can easily take reps away from him throughout spring ball, throughout the summer, and then in camp. So if Kai Money's still playing, it's not a Tom Herman issue anymore. I think that's part of what it was. All right. Well, maybe we'll keep the Kai Money conversation going in hour number two. I don't know. We'll continue to talk Texas football, though, as we sit here 33 days away from kickoff, and we just got to the Longhorns' first opponent, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, in our Horn Top 20. But right now, what we're going to do is take a break and come back. Inconceivable is next as we close out hour number one on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Shirts and Skins, Chad Hastings, Trey Elling.
The great Mike Leach. When and where did you meet Jim Caviezel?
Tom Lemming, who's into recruiting. He knew Jim Caviezel, so I got to know Jim. Through the recruiting and just curiosity, Tom got to know
Ron. Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete has suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, visit austin-orthopedics.com and let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his team get you back in the game. Again, that's Dr. Matthew J. Crawford, Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, austin-orthopedics.com. Snoop, we got a little breaking news in Inconceivable today, because we got to start with a sports-related Inconceivable. Now, those of you hoping to see, and I guess if you're a South Lake Carroll fan or supporter of that program.
This is breaking news.
Hoping to see if you're a football fan, period, hoping to see a Cade Klubnik, Quinn Ewers rematch at a state championship game. Yeah, you're not going to get it, Snoop, because Quinn Ewers is officially foregoing his senior year. In fact, and this is according to 24/7 Sports Property, Bucknuts.com. They cover Ohio State. Ewers will be a member of the Scarlet and Gray this fall camp, which begins tomorrow. A source with knowledge of the situation confirmed to Bucknuts that Ewers is at Ohio State. This comes after the quarterback elected to finish his high school career early, reclassify, and enroll at Ohio State in time for the 2021 season instead of enrolling early prior to the 2022 season. So initially expected to enroll at Ohio State in January. Now Quinn Ewers, the best quarterback prospect, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite Ranking, the best quarterback prospect this state has produced since Vince Young, is getting to Ohio State a full year early, so he will be with the Buckeyes, apparently, when they start practice tomorrow. Snoop, in a week, again, this is like Texas to the SEC, in a week this has gone from, I'm thinking about it, to no, he's in Columbus right now, and this is happening. So,
does he have a high school degree?
Well, if he's enrolling at Ohio State, he would have to have one. It's not like the NFL, Snoop, where you can just kind of do whatever. It's not a transfer portal. You got to finish. So, Quinn Ewers will be a part of the Ohio State program. And You know, I heard a rumor from South Lake Snoop that you're trolling him on social media after the state championship game led to him deciding to end his high school career.
No.
Just say I'm done with the haters like Snoop Daniel. I'm gonna go play college football in the Big Ten. Be done with all this.
No. My trolling was very light. It was like baby trolling. like Fisher Price, my first troll.
Didn't you just like an image or repost an image?
Reposted a guy of Quinn after he was sunned by Cade.
And that sent Quinn Ewers over the edge. So if you're not getting your Cade Klubnik Quinn Ewers rematch and you're upset about it, just go ahead and blame Snoop.
No.
Snoop, did you hear about this fight that broke out on a flight from New Orleans to Austin over the weekend?
No.
So it was yesterday afternoon. Two men got detained at ABIA after, and I've seen the video of this. You can go to all the local news sites have it. I've seen it on KXAN. I'm looking at one on CBS Austin. Fox 7 has talked about it. I think actually Fox 7, the newscast is where I saw it last night. And shout out to everybody at KVU. I don't want to leave KVU out when we talk about our fine local news properties and organizations. But yeah, so the video is all over the place. You can find it wherever. Just throw it in the Google machine. But yeah, Sunday afternoon, two men were detained at ABIA after a brawl. And it was a legit brawl. Broke out, Snoop, over what is one of the, other than people taking their nasty shoes off or just going barefoot on an airplane and sticking their feet in your face. What's the number one complaint anybody has when they're on an airplane?
Besides feet? Oh, yeah. God, I don't know.
How about that seat in front of you reclining a little bit too far?
Yes.
That's what this was over.
Wow.
It was apparently over a seat reclining issue. At 4:21 p.m. yesterday, Austin police were dispatched to the scene of an American Airlines flight where two men were throwing punches on a plane parked at the gate. Viewer video shared with KI shows two men actively exchanging blows while passengers and flight crew attempted to intervene. Calls to clear the aisle and, quote, return to your seats immediately can be heard echoing throughout the cabin as one passenger adamantly repeats, stop, it's not worth it. According to witnesses, the plane was returning to Austin from New Orleans when the two men started verbally assaulting each other over a seat that was stuck in the reclined position. Police were called onto the plane to escort the individuals off the plane and confirmed both were detained. It's unclear if either were arrested. KI reached out to American Airlines for comment, who confirmed that the incident took place. And apparently,
I'm watching it.
I've seen reports that, altercations on airplanes are way up. I don't know, man. This goes into that realm of altercations on airplanes going up, and we've seen people at sporting events throwing bottles and objects at players. I don't know, Snoop. Everybody was cooped up because of COVID. Now that everybody's getting out, people are just wilding out. Yeah.
They loaded it with no sound.
Yeah, that's how I watched on the newscast. I didn't watch it online or anything. So, yeah, man, it's weird. People just acting a fool.
It's a lot of tugging.
Period.
They're grabbing each other's hands and arms.
But I think the maybe it was the FAA put out some numbers that incidents on planes are way up since if things started opening back up and COVID protocols lessened.
Be careful, so. Craig.
Yeah.
Craig's going to be on.
Or Rod coming back. I don't need to be pulling in any extra shifts here at the station because somebody got involved in fisticuffs on an airplane. Snoop, have you ever been on a flight where anything like that's happened? I was thinking about that. I haven't been on a flight where anything remotely resembling a disturbance occurred.
The one flight I went on, Herb Keller was on it from Southwest.
Yeah.
The CEO of Southwest, he was on the flight. So anyway.
That's
it.
Well, that's pretty cool, but nothing considering. I was on an American Airlines flight one time from Dallas to Orlando with Grant Hill.
Oh.
Yeah. I got his autograph at baggage claim.
Co-rookie of the year.
I was a huge Grant Hill fan back in the day. He signed my boarding pass because that's all I had with me. I didn't have anything else. But no, nothing. I don't know. I guess if you've been on one of those flights where you've had a disturbance, Specs text line 337-3776. I want to know because all I see are the videos and videos of people.